Hi, and welcome to the Friday Coffee Meetup podcast for Friday, January 17th, 2020. On today's episode, we'll hear from Maria Alvarez, General Manager of Shared Engineering Services in the AI and Research Division at Microsoft, on the impact of AI. The Friday Coffee Meetup podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory, a Pasadena-based marketing and advertising agency that specializes helping healthcare, consumer goods, clean tech, and aerospace companies achieve rapid, sustainable growth. Echo Factory CEO Mike Schaefer is a co-founder and organizer of Friday Coffee Meetup. If you're interested in how Echo Factory can help your company achieve rapid, sustainable growth, you can learn more at echo-factory.com. Every week, the Friday Coffee Meetup brings together innovators, startups, investors, tech companies, and entrepreneurs at the cross-campus co-working space in Pasadena. You can learn about upcoming meetups and how you can attend in person at FridayCoffeeMeetup.com. Now, here's Maria with this week's presentation.
Wow, this is very nice. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's a privilege for me to be here. And before I start, Pasadena is my hometown. Actually, I live here pretty close, about 5 minutes. And I actually commute to Seattle every week, where my job is. So I never thought that I was going to be able to do a talk in my own town, so which is great. In case of you are wondering about my accent, I am originally from Venezuela, and I've been here in this country for 30 years, and all of them here in Pasadena. So today I am very excited to talk to you about one of the topics that is trending in the world, which is artificial intelligence. AI is transforming computing, computer understanding, computing reasoning, and interacting. IDC estimates additional revenue in shifting revenue driven by AI in the next 3 years by $1.2 trillion. And you wonder how it's going to happen. First, companies will be able to interpret business and customer data in real time and scale, including text, docs, images, video, and voice. As you can imagine, as we process and understand that data, we'll be reasoning on that data and creating real insights for business. And also, we will be able to interact with that data and allow us to create different experiences for and enriching experiences for customers and employees. Now, AI is changing our world and how we see it and interact with it. There is a lot of interest in AI, but sometimes a little bit of confusion around what AI is. So, fundamentally, AI is about computers understanding the world. There are two pieces to this, perception and cognition. Humans can perceive and understand how computers are increasingly able to replicate these abilities in many areas. Machine has been able to see and hear for a long time. Photography was created in the late 19th century, and tape recorders have been around for decades. But they are now increasingly able to understand what they are seeing and hearing and recognizing more complex images and sounds. But it's all about computers increasing their cognition or ability to learn and reason. A good example of this is computers' ability to learn a language and translate computers' ability to study patterns and make precisions. In one word, AI is the capability of a machine to imitate intelligent human behavior. This is an example of the progress that AI technology have made in the last few years. All this benchmark that you see here is what MSR, Microsoft Research, has been able to accomplish in the last few years. We now have been reached 96 of image recognition parity with humans, as good as a Stanford graduate. 95% in a speech-human parity. This is as good as a person that has translation as a living or transcription. We also have made a strong progress in translation. Microsoft Translator is able to translate into 62 languages and is growing. And almost 90% on reading parity with humans. Now, you wonder, how is this possible? These advances that make AI real is for two things that have been able to unleash in the last few years. First, the ability for us to collect and store vast amount of data, and the huge power of computation through cloud computing. And that has unleashed an incredible potential for us for to do more of AI. Now, note that in the previous slide, nothing was at 100%. But it's because also humans don't operate at 100%. We always make mistakes. So that means that AI doesn't have to be 100% accurate to be valuable. And another thing that is important is the AI breakthroughs have come in an incremental way, and it will continue to be that way. AI is not going to be like a moment of AI. It will just continue to be incremental. Microsoft Vision is around not a complete service of AI or a whole solution. It actually is about democratizing AI by providing tools and platform for customers and developers to build their own services and solutions. In the consumer world, you already see this. We already interact with all this technology. We have it in mobile phones. You know, they're getting smarter by the minute. We have the self-driving cars, our smart appliances, the boy assistants. And we will continue to see innovations in many other areas that you may not be aware. For example, farming, manufacturing, and healthcare. In farming, for example, there is a project called FarmBeats where Microsoft is working using sensors, drones, and vision and machine learning algorithms to empower small farmers and maximize crop production in a world of limited land and irrigation challenges. Other areas are smart traps. They're able to put traps where the mosquitoes come, and they're able to follow them and be able to determine and predict if they're going to cause a disease outbreak. Also, imagine using AI and machine learning to create an image recognition to solve problems in manufacturing to increase safety, efficiency, and production. And also, most recently, that you probably have read is the advance of AI and use in AI in healthcare and the ability to create models that are able to predict more diseases and help oncologists, for example, to treat cancer more efficiently. Now, I'm going to show you a video that summarizes
what AI is. Artificial intelligence isn't coming. It's here. It's the defining technology of our time. But it's human ingenuity that makes it so powerful. Jane started losing her vision when she was 12.
California Street.
She uses Seeing AI.
I crept down the stairs and out the door.
Which enables her to read and navigate her world. Microsoft AI is helping farmers adapt to climate change.
We can use technology to help feed the world without wrecking the planet.
Enabling wildlife conservation.
The ability to use AI really democratizes science. WildMe uses images from any source to help study endangered species.
And creating new ways for people with hearing loss to communicate.
I want the exact same information that my hearing friends have.
It's more than just imitating intelligence or sounding like a human. Microsoft AI is changing every industry, from healthcare.
And now you can see these finite details, the relationship with many structures.
To engineering. And telecommunications.
We are using artificial intelligence to change the way we are relating to customers.
AI lets us put people first.
The Microsoft tools really enabled us to breathe digital life into an iconic brand persona.
The product that we make is not a thing in a box.
No.
Microsoft AI empowers others to create experiences and potential. This is just the beginning.
Artificial intelligence, it's just opened up this whole world.
The future we invent is a choice we make.
Okay. Okay, so the invention of any technology has three phases which are cyclical. First is the innovation phase. Second is democratization, when the technology is developed and available in mass. You have to think after that how we responsibly use that technology. Think about the car. The car was introduced in late 19th century. It was democratized by Ford in early 20th century. Legislation was passed that required seatbelts in all vehicles in 1968. But no state required the usage until New York introduced the legislation in 1984. The car has brought a lot of benefits, freedom of travel for people everywhere, and economic transformation. AI is much the same, with the same amazing potential, but with risk. Today, we know that some of the likely dangers of AI, we don't have the luxury to realize that our responsibility should be 80 years from now. We should start to act in today. So we have to ensure that technology empowers people, is inclusive of everyone, and builds trust in the technology. So as AI systems behave more like humans, how will they impact us? How we do develop responsible AI? We're now empowering computers to take decisions that previously have been made by humans. When made accessible to everyone, AI will transform all industries, make us more productive, and help us solve society's biggest challenges. And so as computers behave more like humans, it is important to think about the impact they will have on people and the ethics that should underpin AI. Because every ethical question that has ever been faced for humanity is now an ethical question that we need to think about in relation to computing. That is the reason, due to the importance of AI in our future, Microsoft's President Brad Smith published a book that outlines the principles, policies, and laws for responsible AI. To address the point of the quote, the ultimate question is not only what computers can do, it's what computers should do. In response to that, he basically is saying that we all think about this. It's not just a company, a serious companies, it's countries, governments, universities need to think about this for the course of the next decade. At Microsoft, we have been thinking about how to address some of these challenges, and we have laid out six principles for responsible AI. We believe that we need to develop, in order for us to develop and deploy AI, it has to be guided by these six principles. The four core tenets are all systems should be have fairness, they need to be reliable and safe, they should provide for privacy and security, and be inclusive of everyone based on two foundation principles in transparency and accountability. The first one is fairness. All systems should treat all people fairly. You all have heard about probably the issue with Amazon and their hiring model system that they had. What they did was they wanted to solve a reasonable problem. They have many resumes, and they wanted to be able to process all these resumes pretty quickly and spit out the top five resumes. What happened was that was biased against minorities and women. Why was that? Because at the point of these models is the data that you use to train the model. What data did they use? They used 10 years of all the resumes that the Amazon had prior. Who applied for these jobs? Men. And probably not underrepresented. So that was the result of that. So we need to ensure that that doesn't happen. The next principle is reliability. All systems should perform reliable and safely. You all know about this one. The Apple Maps and Waze, have led drivers to, dangerous situations, avoiding fatalities, others in wrong neighborhoods, and some getting lost or going to the water. So this one is very similar when the car was introduced. When the car was introduced and, a lot of standards for driving were introduced, so similar, we have to take a similar approach for AI. The next principle, privacy and security. All systems should secure and respect privacy. And, in some cases, we're collecting data and the consumers or the people are not even aware that we're consuming this data. One case that was also, very popular was the Roomba vacuum cleaner. Well, Roomba was cleaning your house, but also needed to create a map of your house in order not to, crash with the furniture. Well, later on, they actually wanted to sell that data and provide that data to people like Amazon and Google. And then people were outraged by this because the users didn't know that this was happening. And then the quote was, "Your friendly little Roomba could soon become a creepy little spy that sells maps of your house to advertisers." Then the next one is inclusiveness. And in this case, all systems should be developed and deployed in a way that can benefit all and accessible by all. I will call out two areas, the improvement of that Microsoft has done in improving facial recognition in dark skins, and also the emphasis that we have on making sure that the technology helps people with disabilities. Globally, more than 1 billion people need one or more assistive products. Giving an aging global population, more than 2 billion people will need at least one assistive product by 2030, with many older people needing two or more. Today, only 1 of 10 people they need have access to these products. The next one is transparency. When AI systems are used to make decisions that impact people's lives, it is particularly important that people understand how these decisions were made. For example, if a model predicts that a patient has a condition X and he should receive treatment Y, and a doctor disagrees with it, the doctor wants to understand in a way why the model came to that prediction. So it's extremely important to have explainability and transparency in the models. And the last one, perhaps the most important one, is accountability. Our AI systems are increasingly part of decisions that affect our lives. And those delivering AI assume accountability for the products and services they make, and it's imperative for a flourishing society. So it is important for us to ensure that there is oversight, there is way of us to audit these systems and making accountable to the people. So making it is real. So Microsoft not only has these principles, we actually are making ethics very real to us. And right now, similar to many years ago when we have a software development cycle and we have phases and gates and things like that, now we have the same thing in how we develop models, train them, and deploy them. We have checklists. We have we're developing tools and capabilities in order to test for all these principles before the technology goes out. And then as soon as we have, more capabilities on that, I'm sure that we will release them externally. Now, how AI will impact you? A lot of the talks is about jobs and automation. So while much of the current debate on automation has focused on the potential of mass unemployment, people will have to continue to work together with machines to produce the GDP growth per capita that countries around the world aspire to. McKinsey estimates that people displaced by automation will find another job. Many workers will have to change and expect business processes to transform. Previous transformation did not result in long-term mass unemployment because they came with creation of new types of work. So with that, what type of jobs will stay here? Some of the jobs that will stay here are related to interpersonal relations. Then the people, nurses, social workers, teachers, therapists. And then there also will be new jobs created. Some of them are, listed here. But if you read recently, Amazon has more than 100,000 robots in their warehouses. But they're planning, they're investing significant amount of money to train those workers and other areas. Most importantly, all jobs need diversity. It is important to acknowledge that AI makes diversity even more important than it already is. And this is because we're talking about designing computers to think like human beings. And we cannot do this in a way that reflects the diversity of thinking in the world unless we have diverse teams working on this technology. We at Microsoft not only are concerned with promoting the technology, but even more importantly, is encouraging the inclusion of diverse profiles in our development, sales, and all functions. I am personally the executive sponsor of diversity inclusion for our division, and my role is part of doing these talks to attract and recruit and retain our talent. All jobs need diversity in three things. Data, as we talked about it, the importance of creating, ensuring that the data is complete as much as possible. Also, it's important that the algorithms, in some cases, amplify biases, so ensuring that how we build these algorithms and apply the principles to ensure that they are responsible. And very importantly, the people. AI scientists need to, in general, they come from certain social economic areas and went to different, schools and things like that. It's important that they are able to work with multifunctional teams, not only researchers and developers, but also psychologists, sociologists, lawyers, to ensure that data and that this technology is fair. And finally, AI needs everyone. Advanced AI together means people working in AI need to work together to ensure that that we're building systems that will help us and not hurt us. It is important to embrace our uniqueness. Diversity perspectives matter in AI, so we need to all work together. And more importantly for all of us, we need to be curious, and AI is changing the world, and it's important for you not to be caught off guard. So there is plenty of articles and books about it. You can read the Future Compute, the book that was written by our president, but there are many other books out there. And finally, I want to leave you with this. The power of AI is not to replace people with machines, but supplement human capabilities with the unmatched ability of AI to analyze huge amount of data to find patterns that will be impossible to detect. Thank you, and I'm open for questions.
That was amazing, Maria. I love the focus on diversity here. John is going to take the mic around and get some questions answered.
All right. I'm going to start with a question for you. I'm glad you talked about the ethical issues as far as AI is concerned, and it sounds like that is something that Microsoft is taking very seriously. At the same time, you mentioned Amazon, Google, Facebook, some of these other large companies are probably also investing a lot in artificial intelligence. Can you talk about some of your competition or other companies that we should maybe be paying attention to as far as what they're doing as far as AI is concerned, and also what other countries are doing? Because I can certainly see how AI can be used for bad intentions as well.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. So I think Microsoft has been taking a very strong position in perhaps diverting from other technology companies. We do have a board that oversees everything that we do with AI. especially, you know, in facial recognition, Microsoft have made very clearly that we are not going to use that technology for law enforcement. Other companies have done differently. Google actually tried to also assemble a board similar to the one that we have, and actually created a lot of backlash in some of the people that were in that board, and actually it was dismantled. So I think we are leading the way on how we do that. Our president has been, pushing pretty strongly about regulating tech and doing some of the things because, some of these companies are not using the technology and, the impact of it. So I think in that regard, Microsoft is driving for ensuring that people trust the technology, and we are living by that principle. And I'm telling you that we are, ensuring everything in training our employees and assuring that the models that we use are not, that fulfill these principles. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Jaden. My background is in philosophy, so I'm kind of interested in that part of your presentation. So I have a little bit of a two-parter. One would just be, where does Microsoft stand with regards to data ownership? Because a lot of the issues that you talked about with regards to AI ethics can be traced back to who owns data. And so, for example, Google, if you're using their location services, that data belongs to them and not the users who create the location data, even though the device belongs to those individuals. So I'm just curious where Microsoft stands with regards to that. And then secondly, you mentioned that there's a checklist for AI ethics now within the sort of product rollout process. And I'd be curious as to what specifically is involved within that, checking that box, like what requirements must be filled. Because it seems like with regards to AI ethics, a lot of people nowadays use it as more of a marketing term or a buzzword. And so I'd be curious as to what specifically Microsoft does in order to make sure that they are deploying this technology ethically, because a lot of the results can only be seen afterwards upon the results of deploying the AI.
Got it. Great. I'll start with the second one. So some of the things that we look at is, for example, data sheets. So if you look at it, when you look at a product, you have specifications and you know how that product needs to work and all that. So some of the things that we are looking at is having teams fill out a form where they basically say, where is this data coming from? Where it came from, and in how you got it, and how it was labeled, and all that. So, and then depending on the answers of there, then, teams will have to do additional work. And then there are many other things, not only that. Then we also, if the model is predicting certain things and it's kind of strange, we have mechanisms to debug and then understand why on the explainability of it. On the first question, Microsoft has been very clear about, that you are in control, specifically in consumers. You own your data, and you are able to say what are you opting in and what, you want to, share or not. Because we are so focused on enterprise, our customers own their data. And we are not going to see that data because it belongs to them. So we have created mechanisms for us to rush reasoning over the data in a private matter, so we don't see any of the information. We're able to create models in that way, privacy preserving, and then we'll just get the output just to protect specifically customer data. Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you for your presentation. My name is Pam Schultz. I'm a career coach at the UCLA Business School. And I'd be interested in what are some of the uncommon or unusual backgrounds of people on your team? Because I can think about some obvious backgrounds, but what are maybe some surprising backgrounds that contribute to your team results?
Yeah, I mean, we have, for example, people that are psychologists, simply as that. They are just working on understanding how we interact with people, and then they don't know computing, but they know how to interact. And then this is very key and important as we developed new interfaces and ways to interact with consumers or customers. So that's one. I think we also have hired sociologists. They are, you know, even researchers that have changed physics and come through, you know, to be researchers in AI. Lawyers, you know, we need a lot of lawyers. So the lawyers are, you know, very involved on this, so which is very interesting. We also have people from the military. You know, Microsoft has many programs to allow people to re-enter the, you know, so then we have programs for military, for autism, for people that are, you know, changing careers, coming back from maternity leave. So, I mean, you know, and in mechanical engineers, and then we have them in coding training, and then they're able to change and switch careers. So a lot of, you know, different, you know, careers.
Hi, I'd like to ask a couple things. One was just a little bit more about regulation and how you see that being achieved. And then also for the corporation side, being that leadership will change, you know, throughout the life of the corporation, I'm curious what Microsoft has in place to maintain this integrity and these ethics for future leadership to follow.
Oh, yes, I'll address the first one. We have created the Office of Ethics in Microsoft. And so, you know, that's a team. It's like no different from an engineering team or the lawyers of HR. So regardless of, you know, if leadership changes, that function exists, and there are foundations for us to continue that. No different from the standards that we have for software development, for also making our software accessible. We have standards for accessibility for all our products that we run. So I think that shouldn't. The first question, I think, you know, our president of the company, it is the chief lawyer. And then he is pretty, you know, his job is really to influence and work with other companies and then governments and then trying to see how is, you know, how to make sure that we regulate this. So he's working through it, and he goes to Davos and talks to the EU and all that. So pretty vocal and influence on that. Thank you.
Over here, Marie. Hi, my name is Evan. I'm a data scientist. I had a quick question for you on the creative destruction piece that you mentioned. And it sounded sort of like you were saying, hey, you know, we're destroying some jobs with AI. That's true, but empirically we've seen jobs get recreated. Jaron Lanier, is a researcher at Microsoft, has also brought up like paying people for their data,
yeah,
because there's some concern that actually we may not be creating jobs as quickly as we're destroying them.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of unpack the creative destruction piece and what we can do to ensure that we are creating more jobs than we're destroying?
Yeah. Yeah, so this one is a difficult one. So I think some jobs will be replaced for sure. Some people, I have read different views there. You know, some people think that it's going to be massive. And then so even if we create new jobs, you know, that won't cover. So I think the importance of retraining and people being able to do that. The book also talks about...
Just to clarify, so we're going to, I mean, like, the AI is basically, you know, matching Stanford graduate students, right? Are we supposed to train people...
So the AI currently is matching like Stanford graduate students in their terms of perception. So is the argument that we're going to retrain people to be smarter than Stanford graduates?
No, I don't think so. That's not the point. But we'll be creating new jobs and in you know in different ways. And then another thing that the book talks about is creating, to your point, on-demand economy. So now you see that. So people will have capabilities that potentially, you know, we can use on demand and create that economy as well. And in one good example could be that data. You know, we generate data, and your data is valuable, and potentially you can be able to be paid for you to submit a set of your data to improve, you know, some of these models. But this one is a tricky one, so it's not, you know, we don't have a silver bullet, you know. It is something that he's being, you know, discussed and worked through.
Over here.
Yeah, I had a question. It seems like there's a huge chasm between, for at least for enterprise customers, between, like, optimism around potential AI solutions and the actual results. I'm curious, in your experience with your customers, what types of customers or situations or environments have led to the best solutions, and where you might not see that. And just anything that you can share around what has made your customers the most successful in deploying AI solutions.
Great. I think, you know, there is a lot of, so we have several services to help customers. So a lot of them are using it for fraud detection, to speed, reading forms and processing for customer service. So improving on that. There are, many others that, we now are reading forms, to process them fast. And in other, I don't know all the, all the applications, but then more and more we are providing the capabilities and the customers are creating solutions that, that we even think of. So, and then, we work with them because some are innovating. They're trying to see what they do with their data and how they improved it. And then some others are more advanced. Some, basically are using HoloLens to train, to do remote repairs and things like that, using it for, operation in universities, So many things, applications. So I think this is the beginning of it. The group that I'm working right now is creating the platforms for us to guide the developers and the customers to unlock their potential on their own on their own products and services.
Over here.
Thank you so much for your work in improving diversity and inclusion. In addition to the book you recommended by who I presume is a boss's boss's boss, and also a white cisgendered male who is going to have a very Pollyanna version of this, I'm curious if you can recommend to us some more inclusive, diverse writers in the realm of Shoshana Zuboff, Tessie McMillan Cotton, maybe Mike Montero, who are writing on these issues with a much drastically different version of AI than I'm sure I'm going to get by Microsoft.
Got it. Yes. I mean, you probably know a lot of the people. I recently read this article about three women and how, their view about reducing bias in AI. And one of them is a researcher. She used to work at Microsoft. Her name is Timit Gibbons. Her push has been about the scientist community. And because it's not only, the data and all that, and that was my point at the end on the data, on the people, pushing on the scientists on AI and making, because they are biased, and in general they are, coming from, different social backgrounds and not necessarily underrepresented. And she's actually pushing for an AI conference, and I really love that because usually there is an AI conference every year. And the problem was that the majority of the scientists in Africa couldn't come because they couldn't get visas. So basically she pushed to move the conference to Africa. So then we are able to have more people underrepresented to be part of this. So I would say her, that would be a good one.
Hi, thanks for coming. It's fascinating. You had a slide that talked about jobs. One is jobs that will survive, like nurses, teachers, and jobs that will be new. What are the kind of jobs, just roughly, that might go away?
Some of the ones for automation, the ones that you have today where the robots will, in warehouses. Potentially, I think some people claim that right now AI can read the scans better than the technicians. But then there is an issue where also, AI could be attacked. and people, for example, could do minor, what they call it, adversarial attacks, where they change a little pixel in an image, and that actually can change in basically a perfectly human being, basically say, the system say that you are, you know, you have a problem, and then, you know, cause problems with fraud and, you know, and then for the hospitals because you are being treated or something that you don't have. So then in that regard, you know, people, you know, say, well, you know, yes, you know, the AI can read better, but then, you know, a human will need to continue to study and be able to do those things. Yeah.
Over here. On this side.
Hi. Saw the principles that Microsoft is endorsing for AI. They're very good. I'm curious about how that figures into what I know a colleague of mine that works in AI calls silicon empathy, the idea of how somebody, an individual, connects to an AI that might be protecting them. So people worry about, you know, a car with it that's AI driven, you know, crashing to save a bus full of people as opposed to them, they themselves. And that sort of, that connection, obviously Microsoft's focused on enterprise. I'm wondering about kind of the focus on that sort of personal relationship an individual has with AIs.
I mean, that one, I think we all have read about it, you know, and there are hard problems there, you know, who do you kill, you know, the dog or the driver or the other one. So I think the book takes an approach of we need to work this with governments, with universities. This is not a simple problem. And, you know, and the companies as well, you know, and I don't think I have a full answer there. Governments are hesitant to work through this. I believe, and I may be wrong, that Germany is probably the first one that is taking a stand on, okay, what happens here, and then, you know, to make certain decisions. But it's going to take some time, and that's the reason we are saying we cannot wait 80 years. You know, we are the first generation with this, so we need to think through for the generations to come and in how we do it responsibly with the right regulations and laws.
Right here, Maria.
Hi, I'm Leslie. I work in AI and natural language processing. So the Pew Center has said that trust is at an all-time low in the media. It's also at an all-time low in tech and certainly in AI. Data is inherently biased. There's no such thing as unbiased data because it's based on definitions, and definitions themselves are political. We just heard gender. So just words are inherently biased. I'm wondering if there's going to be some type of standard, I don't know, around curating content so that it has a label on it, so that it's consistent, people can actually know it comes from a certain source, or it's been validated in certain ways, some kind of marking. That seems to be the best we can do, and if you've heard of anything like that.
Yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, I read an article last week about, I think, and I am bad with names, but this is the lady that owns or manages the largest data set of ImageNet. And she basically, you know, everybody uses that data set for images. And they, you know, because of the biases and all that, so then what they're working on is categorizing better that data set, cleaning it, removing offensive images that for some people are offensive. So they are doing data cleansing and trying to improve what you mentioned. So that's what I, you know, read last week. So that's, you know, progress, because if that is the main data set that the people use for the models publicly, you know, publicly available, that, you know, is progress for that.
Back here?
Yes.
Hello, my name is Gary O'Connor. I read from a small news source that Apple is being asked to give up their codes so that the present administration can get access. And I was wondering if Microsoft in future would have a press PR method of releasing information such as that to the general public, because the main networks tend to toe the government line at the moment. Thanks.
I cannot comment on what Apple does or they don't do. We don't have a phone presence, so we don't have that. I think we are very protective of consumer privacy and data, and that belongs to them. And in the company, will reward that, and I mean, save it and store it, and you know, to the principles that we have in our terms of use for consumers. For enterprise, is clear. That belongs to them. We're simply a data processor. They own their data.
Over here. Hi, my name is Janine Letford, and I was an educator, so I'm glad to see my profession up there.
Oh, good.
I was just at CSUN, and the president spoke. IBM was there, and they also shared about Watson, and the president spoke about three main skills that our kids need: the intellectual curiosity, the courage, and adaptability. Your list includes curiosity, and as research shows, like I mentioned before, our kids are kind of being educated out of their creative and curiosity thinking, and we're sending you the pipeline of your future next generation's work. What is Microsoft and just your crew doing to better communicate with this pipeline of kids that we're sending to you to make sure they have these skills?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, you know, it's great to see. For me, I've been in Microsoft for 8.5 years. When I entered the company, it was very different with what it is today. When I got there, you probably saw the very famous drawing that showed how the organizational structures of these big companies. Apple was one person, Steve Jobs, and everything around them. And Microsoft was a bunch of groups with pointing guns. That culture was very competitive, you know, and it was not a curiosity company. Since Satya came in, that has changed. And Satya, and you see then the results of the company, all-time highs today, and the stock, is because he moved to a grow mindset. Instead of fixed mindset, growing. We are learning. We learn from our mistakes. We recognize them, and we use that to learn. You probably, several years ago, heard the big the chatbot that we have to pull out, because it was repeating, you know, horrible things. We took that seriously, and Satya was very empathetic about that. So that is rippling, through the company and changing and developing empathy. And then so we are now, even, you know, I heard recently that we're going to actually, we are encouraging learning for our employees, allowing that. And then we're measuring all these things, inclusion and some of the things that we have released externally. So, and for the first time, you know, we probably every year bring about 1,000 people for interns, and almost half of them are diverse, women or people of color. So we are making, you know, and trying to bring people from all places to bring that curiosity, and then they come to us, and then we'll help them to grow within the company. So I am very happy to see this change.
One last question, Maria. It seems like AI is rapidly developing, and I'm not really sure, you know, at what stage of that development curve, in your opinion, AI is at right now. But in your opinion, in the next 5-10 years, where do you see AI as having the biggest impact on our lives here in general?
I think, there are two different things. One is in our regular lives, you know, and at home, you know, we are using more of the technology, assistants and all that, voice assistant, different canvases for us to see things. At work, you will see basically our tools to allow more remote work, when you are working and searching for information, getting insights and, mining all that data in a corporation to even help you more with that. I think we are advancing significantly. Healthcare will be a major transformation there. But I think we have work to do, and especially addressing some of these some of these issues. Some people are saying that we should have the developers should implement the same code that the doctors have. Do not do evil. Because there is a lot of power in this technology, and then if it's not done right, you can not use it for good. So I think we have to. It's an incremental view, and then we'll see. But I can see a lot of things changing for us. Thank you so much.
The Friday Coffee Meetup podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory. Learn more about how Echo Factory can help your business achieve rapid, sustainable growth at echo-factory.com. And get all the details about upcoming Friday Coffee Meetup episodes at FridayCoffeeMeetup.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.